Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to powerfully change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton, founder and CEO of Jailbreak Leadership. In Jailbreak Leadership, we unlock the power of AI by creating your AI strategy, streamline the technical and logistical implementation, and most importantly, guide the AI adoption of your team. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD. Today's conversation is different. Like many of you, I've been watching this AI thing explode. Almost daily, I'm blown away by new use cases, new capability, or questions that AI helps me answer in minutes that would have taken me hours in the past. At times, it feels like it's almost magical. At the same time, if I'm being honest, it also feels like it's moving faster than I can keep up. Every week, there seems to be another breakthrough, another tool, another prediction about how AI is going to change business, work, and our lives. And that's exactly why I've wanted to have this conversation today. Because the more I've studied AI, talked with business leaders, and explored what successful implementation looks like, the more convinced I've become that technology is not the biggest challenge ahead. Leadership is. I don't believe most CEOs and founders fully appreciate the role they are about to play in one of the most significant transformations in business history. This isn't simply another software implementation. This is a transformation that will reshape jobs, decision-making, organizational structures, business models, competitive advantage, and perhaps most importantly, the relationship between people and work itself. Yet many organizations are approaching AI with a scattered collection of experiments, disconnected tools, and isolated initiatives, hoping something sticks. The question isn't whether AI will change your business. The question is whether you will lead that change intentionally or simply react to it as it unfolds around you. That's why I invited two of my colleagues from Jailbreak Leadership to break down what this all means. Sanjee Prabhakaran, the CEO and founder of Bytes, who brings the technical expertise and implementation experience to help organizations understand what AI is actually capable of today. Louis Cruz, who brings decades of organizational development expertise and understands something many leaders overlook. People adoption is often the difference between transformation and disappointment. Together, we're going to explore why so many organizations are struggling to achieve meaningful ROI from AI, what leaders are getting wrong and what they're getting right, and how to think about AI implementation as both a technology challenge and a human challenge. My hope is that this conversation creates a healthy sense of urgency, not fear, but urgency. Because leaders who thrive over the next 5 years will not necessarily be the ones with the best technology. They'll be the ones who learn how to align people, strategy, culture, and technology into a shared vision for the future. Ready to jump in, guys?
Sounds good.
Before we dive into AI, I want the folks here to get to know you. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what drew you into helping business leaders navigate the biggest transformations of our time.
All right, I'll kick it off. I've been an entrepreneur for most of my life. I started with this company, Bytes Inc., that I launched back in 2002, so about 24 years now. And our core focus was looking at the operational challenges that small to mid-sized companies face. So we started looking at the various operations that they are going through, figure out what kind of systems they are using, and go through a whole discovery phase to identify the best way to bring technology into their operations and get a better ROI in the end for what they're trying to accomplish. It's a way of making sure that their employees are motivated and they are able to perform at the peak without doing mundane tasks. A lot of times you see people doing duplicate entries into different databases and it just kind of dilutes their whole data repository. So that's kind of what we focus on. And now with all these AI tools coming in, we have started looking into AI engineering in the most efficient manner with proper guardrails in place and getting them much better automation with the proper human validation. That's what Bytes is all about.
So why are you drawn to this work, Sanjee?
The excitement about where technology is heading and at the same time looking at where people are failing in adopting this new technology. So that's why we are taking a step back and trying to see how we can streamline the process and educate the executives about the right approach.
Awesome. Thanks. Louis, what have you been up for the last few years here?
Well,
and why this now?
So over the last 25 years, I've worked in higher education. And one of the things that I've become really interested in is employee engagement over the last 10, 15 years or so. And the reason I'm interested now is because there's a lot of fear out there about AI adoption. And people are afraid that it's going to take over their jobs and their identity is tied to work or a portion of their identity. And when people have some fear, they freeze. So relating that back to employee engagement, you know, Gallup says right now about 31% of the workplace is engaged. And so if you introduce a new technology that creates fear, where do we think the engagement is going to go from 31%? So I'm very interested in figuring out ways to adopt a new technology and keep people connected in the workplace.
I'm with you on that one. One of the reasons I do what I do is I just think that figure you just noted, I think that's an atrocity. I think most people should get to show up at work and enjoy what they're doing and finding meaningful. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy that it's not. And now, like you say, now we've added this into the phrase. So what does this look like? Because this is going to kind of change everything. And what's the role of the leader in this process?
Right. So, that's the important part.
For sure. I see different numbers here, but Deloitte had noted that only 15%, and I've heard as high as 30%, which is not great either, of organizations report significant measurable ROI. So for the most part, people are out here doing some things, but they're not seeing the business return. What do you guys think the major reason for that is? What are you seeing out there? Why are people struggling so?
I think the biggest challenge is a lot of confusion from the media. It's pushing so many different tools and ideas every day that people are just bogged down. They just give up. They say, where do I start? What do I do? So that is an area where people have to step back and think through as to what is meaningful for their day-to-day life and see how they can take one or two tools and just focus on that rather than getting confused with all the media blasts.
So it's mostly confusion and
the media
is like taking us down the wrong path here, reading the wrong things.
Yeah.
That's why you should be listening to this podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, it's that trending is what they look at and they get really confused and bogged down.
Any thoughts, Lewis?
I've seen people using AI differently in the workplace. And so in my experience, there hasn't been an overall strategy. You've got in an office of 10 people, you've got two people using it to write better emails and you've got somebody else using it in a different way. So I think it's for folks using it like that, it's impossible to measure. So I think a better approach would be a strategy around AI implementation, adoption, and, you know, what are the goals? And, you know, in a couple of workplaces that I've been around, I haven't quite seen that yet over the past few years. I believe it's coming. I know it's coming. But that's what I can say based on my own experience.
I think I'm in total agreement with both you guys on mm-hmm. this thing. We're just hearing so many things. It makes you feel like, oh, I got to get into this game.
Right.
But we're not stepping back and saying, what does that really mean? What's it look like in my organization? Where can we actually apply these tools in a way that makes sense and then roll it out in a way that makes sense? What I see is people just kind of dabbling here and there with no real grand plan. And then the next piece is maybe implementing some things that aren't cause problems versus actually fixing some problems. Things aren't always been verified and validated maybe the way they should be to make sure it's really working the way it's supposed to. Because we hear about that in the media too.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, it's what people what people have been calling shadow AI. People are dabbling in so many different things, but there's no consistency.
And even at the top, we don't even know what people are doing.
Biggest problem. Yes.
So that's I guess the word shadow comes into this whole fray here.
Yeah, that's true.
Are companies kind of underestimating how fast this change is happening around them? Do they really grasp that? What do you think?
I think there are, part of the leadership class is really looking at, I think there are things are moving fast and they're getting pressured either by the board or by the media and Wall Street is, what is your plan? So they just want to jump into it, something, just to say that, we started using this particular tool and we are seeing some gains, but then again, there is no strategy behind why they need to do it. A lot of times there's no reason for them to do that particular thing. There could be something else that would give them a better ROI. It's that strategy piece that's missing.
Sanjeev, your comment about people hear about it in the news and they hear about it on the internet and everything, and you brought up what's the strategy. I think you're right, because if the goal is to use AI, people can just start using it.
Yep.
But if and you can't measure an ROI when a goal is just to use AI. The strategy piece is the important piece. How are we going to use AI in a strategic fashion to help us reach our objectives? And objectives could be a lot of different things. And there'll be an ROI associated with some of those, maybe not all of them, but some of them. And so I think that's probably potentially what could be going on.
Yeah, you're right on.
We have to start with the goal in mind.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
It's kind of funny. I think I'm maybe guilty, right? So I'm using AI. I've got a half-day facilitation. I go to AI. I try to teach this thing everything it knows about me and my processes and systems and all this good stuff. And I say, all right, help me design this thing. And boom, out pops this thing, and it's great.
Sure.
But I'm not really stepping back and what was the value there other than it felt good,
Exactly.
And it was quick.
I mean, it was quick, yeah.
I'm using it for therapy now. It's saving me $165 a week with my therapist.
There you go.
So there's one ROI for me.
And that's exactly what organizations are going through. They are seeing a lot of their employees using it in that manner. They get some excitement, they get some satisfaction. But in the end, it's just one individual at a time. There's no collective collaboration in how that can affect the bottom line for the company. And that's where the C-level suite is kind of missing the whole picture.
So back to people. I've actually been involved with facilitating a couple conversations with some teams, some leadership teams, and actually across the whole small business where we brought in the subject of AI. And we've asked the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your level of use of AI? And it's a bell-shaped curve. You got like maybe 10, 20% are like, oh man, we're all in. We're using this all kinds of places, personally, professionally. Then you got some people in the middle kind of dabbling. And then you got a few people go, I'm never going to use this thing. I've tried it once and it was stupid or something. So, I mean, that's kind of like, I've heard that and I've actually seen that where we've actually asked people and organizations. That's kind of where the spread is.
Yes.
So it's kind of an interesting when we start to think about people and where they're at in this whole process. Well, with that said, it's happening very, very fast. I saw this little chart the other day, talked about how, when 100 million people start using something. So they looked at the internet revolution. They said that took 15 to 20 years before business actually transformed to the level they're really seriously using. 100 million were using it. The smartphone took 10 years. Mm. And they're saying ChatGPT was launched in November 2022. And 2 months later, they had 100 million users. So the prediction is that this thing's going to be full blown in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm. But we've been talking about how difficult it is for people to adopt the things. Once again, you get the bell-shaped curve. You got some people, no way I'm going to use this. Some people like kind of hesitate, and then some people all in. So my question is, why is it people so resistant to this or resistant to change, period? And I'll shoot that to you, Lewis.
Sure. There's probably a lot of reasons. I mean, fear of the unknown. How is this going to impact me? How is it going to impact my job? There's a loss of control or a loss of kind of rituals. I have my rituals that I do every day. I get into the office. I turn my computer on. I go make myself a coffee, I sit down, I go through email. I mean, AI can transform everything from that email portion forward, and people don't know what that's going to look like. Maybe another reason is there's different generations in the workforce today. People that are my kids' age in their mid-20s, early 20s, they're adopting it much faster than I am. I'm less likely to do things that I'm not good at than somebody more adept to technology. There's a lot of reasons. And that's part of the challenge.
Yes, for sure. Any thoughts, Sanjeev?
No, I think Lewis hit the bullet there, target there with everything that is out there. But it's really, there's a mix of fear and a mix of excitement. And and that's kind of what leads to the confusion, I think. So guidance from the top and, what is appropriate for the company would be the best strategy.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Kind of a funny story here. We have a puppy in the house. Back to talking about change. So he's sequestered down in the kitchen. And I usually get up before my wife.
Yeah.
In front of my rituals, go downstairs, get a cup of coffee. And then I go to my office and I do my little morning rituals and meditation, all this good stuff. Mm. And so we got the dog down there. So my wife gets up after me and she's kind of the one that takes care of the dog. So I just been going to my office and missing out on my coffee. So my wife, being the great person she is, decided to buy me a coffee maker for my office. So this morning, it's like one of those ones you see in the hotel, dump some water in. Yeah. Well, it became this whole project. I'm going through change management at 5 o'clock this morning. I dumped the water in. I turned the thing on. I'm going, how come I only got a half a cup of thing here? Then I realized there's water like all over the floor. Right? So it's kind of, again, like you like trying to introduce something new.
Yes.
There's always these things that come with it. Do I really want to go down this path? So I try to tell my wife. She goes, well, we'll send that back. And I'm going, do we really need another one? So I ultimately said, yeah, well, I guess we do, just because she was feeling so bad about me not having my coffee in the morning. But even little changes like that.
I mean, yes.
Versus
yes.
This thing that's got all this unknown.
I like the word you use, sequestered downstairs. Yeah. The dog is sequestered downstairs.
That's right.
So how do we communicate this AI change to folks? Right now, there's like this utopia, like all of a sudden, none of us are going to be working. We're all going to be at the beach doing something really fun. Or it's going to eat our lunch and we're all going to disappear. It's going to be something in the middle. So how do we start to communicate this in a way that doesn't create the fear? What opportunities can we put together around that?
I think one of the things is leaders must demystify the technology and give employees an active stake in the transformation. You can call it as a tool that automates work that nobody likes to do, rather than calling it a tool that does your job.
It's going to eliminate
a big
your
difference.
Job,
yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, because when you say does your job, then the fear is, am I going to lose my job? Mm. If you promote it as a tool that can take away the mundane tasks that you do, where now the hours you gain can be used for something else, creates curiosity and creates and eliminates the fear. So I think that's has to come from the top.
Yeah. To that point, one of the things we did in these little groups that we got together, like I said, where we kind of got some data, was we really try to show them how to use the tool. We actually did a live demo in our meeting to say, all right, everyone should give this a whirl, because reality is you start playing with it, you kind of get drawn into the sucker, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah, exactly. you realize it's kind of cool and kind of fun and not something necessarily to be scared of.
That's true, yeah.
Any thoughts on communication, Lewis?
I think you have to give people a reason why. Why are we looking at using this? What will it do for us? How will it help? And if the goal is to reduce headcount, that's one thing. If it's to help our business become more nimble, right, which could relate to more profitable, then people can buy in. But if you don't start with, here's the goal, here's why we're using it, here's what we've seen where it works, you know, in this capacity, in this fashion, you got to get the buy-in. And in order to do that, you have to be honest, upfront, and communicate the reasons why. And people will buy in.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's a big mind shift for the leaders and for the employees. Unenlightened leaders see AI as a tool to shrink the payroll. But, you know, people who are visionary, they see it as, okay, how can we increase ROI and how can we motivate the employees? So when you combine those two, there is probably a better chance of
adoption,
mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
All right. So I'm an old guy. So I first started working I was working in a manufacturing environment as a manufacturing engineer, and this is back in the days of Deming and Crosby and those guys bringing this whole quality management thing. And the whole philosophy was, if you want to go solve a problem, go talk to the people that actually have the problem. Right. We had all these teams, and we had these tools, right, where we put people in a room and said, hey, we got this problem in manufacturing. You're the machine operator. What are your thoughts? And so we actually engaged everybody, and we had the tools to support that. I think this is a similar one where we want to say, it's your job. How can we get creative? Like, how do you see using this tool? Explain the tool, show people how the tool can be used, and then start to tap into them. And that becomes their idea. That changes the whole product.
Oh,
that
was part of the game.
That was part of the idea with the whole Deming thing was like, okay, the answer came from the shop floor.
Yeah.
They got ownership now. It isn't like, oh, the boss says we got to go do this. Like, no, we came up with this thing.
That's true.
So I think this lends itself to that too. It's like, yeah, you know, this is your position. How can we do it differently?
Well, and then that creates a whole new way of rethinking job roles.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So it's not just tasks. It's the role.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's a big opportunity. It's a shift.
It's a shift, yeah.
That's the shift I think we're actually looking at. By the way, you got this job. You now have this assistant.
Right.
So it was like they gave you a college intern. The whole key is how do you communicate in a way that this intern knows what to do.
What to do, exactly. Mm-hmm. And a good story, if I can share a quick one.
Sure, of course. I love stories.
You know, one of the medtech companies that we work with had this issue about getting the product to FDA stage within a certain time frame, but they were running 6 months late. And the whole reason was there is a process or step in there for QA automation. And that takes several steps to create that, those scripts. You know, typically takes, whenever there's a change order, it takes about 2 to 3 weeks to create the new set of steps to automate that. When we had our resource go in a couple of weeks, the person figured out that you can use certain AI tools to speed up that process. And so when going through that, he found that the 3-week process could be cut down to 2 days. So that's a huge savings. But now the extra time is for validating it, which may take another day. But you're still saving a lot of time in going that. So by understanding the pain point and the reasoning and, you know, how that's a better to the ROI and to the bottom line helped our team to kind of get through that stage in a much cleaner and quicker manner. So that's something interesting to see from a statistics point of view.
Yeah. Well, back to kind of the premise of this podcast and we were talking about earlier is the role of leadership in this whole thing and the need to enroll your people and get them into the program. This isn't just about, oh, we're going to reduce headcount. It's like, really, how do we change how people show up at work? How do they interface with this new technology that we have?
Yeah.
And have it drive to the bottom line and get that ROI. But have the team get past that 30%.
Yes.
Maybe this is the opportunity. That number has not changed in like 25 years since I think they've been tracking it, Lewis. So this might be the thing we actually, the opportunity we have to actually make more, look more meaningful for folks.
Right. And that's why the top level coming down saying, hey, this is a transformation. It's a learning process and it's a mind shift. Then that whole fear can probably be eliminated.
Yes.
Well, and it's a learning process for everybody.
Yes.
Right. I mean, this is transformational technology. And, you know, Sanjeev might be better at it than I am, but we're still both learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but things changing every week. You got to keep learning.
That's a fast-moving program.
Fast-moving train, exactly, yeah.
So let's talk about some practicality here. So if I'm a CEO and I'm running a small business from 25 people to 150 people, what are the first steps? What's the process as experts? How would we start to introduce this? What are your thoughts?
Again, I said this earlier, but you've got to start with the reasons why and what are the goals and how do we think that this new technology can help us achieve those goals. And then you start enrolling your team to ask the right questions. What problems are we trying to solve? What are the things that we can kind of save in our daily routine? And how do we make sure that the data is correct? The data going in is accurate, and then the data coming out is valid. And I think that's where I would start.
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that saying, you know, look for the low-hanging fruits. You know, what can be a task that you can take up which will lead to reducing the pain point, getting quicker ROI, and that's where you start. Once you do that, there is motivation for the employees also to see, oh, yeah, we're seeing some good results here. And
let it sell itself, right?
Where it'll sell itself, yeah. And some of the
generate some wins.
Some wins, exactly, right?
And
yeah.
And you can celebrate those.
And that minimizes the fear, right? Mm-hmm. And so good examples would be like content creation. If a company is in that business, that's one area. There could be client communications and tech support. Those are some of the areas where we have seen good gains and results and better ROI without no need to reduce your payroll, but improve the communication. Like if you're saving time in client tech support, you can put that into client communication and get a better kind of adoption with the client.
And then training too.
Training is another big area. Yes. Yep. So there's a lot of reinvestment that could be done without having that mentality of, oh, I can cut down the payroll here. That may not be necessary is the key thing.
Well, step one is really stepping back and saying, what are we trying to achieve? What are our goals here? As we understand AI today, you know, where do we think this could do for us as a business?
Yep.
Then start to bring some people together and sit down and say, we need a strategy. We kind of talked about that earlier. Like, so what is our strategy? Stop throwing things against the wall. Having anybody wants to do ChatGPT, go for it. And then now you've lost control. Now we want to have a very precise direction we want to go. And out of that, figure out, okay, where's the best place to start to apply it? And look for some quick wins.
Yes.
When we get some momentum, get something that's got an ROI that says, yes, this does work. This is doing something for us.
True.
And at the same time, enrolling our people. Have a well-defined communication plan and enrollment and education plan for our employees.
Perfect.
Yep. So you can have those early adopters probably on that first team, right, that's going to go put this thing in. But who are the other folks that are kind of around this, and how do you bring them on board? So they become the salespeople.
Yes.
And then how do we continuously communicate this with folks and say, yes, we're doing this. Here's why we're doing this. Here's the ROI. Here's why it's important. And here's what we're doing to facilitate the process from the people perspective.
There you go. Train the trainer.
Train the trainer. Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reality is what we're really seeing is kind of more people just kind of throwing things against the wall and seeing what might stick here.
Yeah, that's the sad part, yes.
So you got any stories that you could share that, like, here's an application that you've seen that's been highly successful that you could share, leaving the names off or whatever?
Sales teams within a company, when they are talking to a client, they need quick access to data, whether it's customers' previous orders or what did the customer say the last time. So many of them have a good CRM system, but what happens is sometimes the CRM system may not have all the data because they are using another system to collect the order data. Now that's in a different system. So if you can put all that data together into an LLM, an AI engine, which is what we did for one of our customers, all of a sudden the data started to come in much quicker. So when they're on a call, it's almost real time. You get real data coming back, and now they are having a much more educated conversation with the client, which can lead to further orders coming from the client, right? So that was a good transition that we saw, and the sales team were super excited when they saw the results coming in. And so the motivation level went up, the sales started to come in, and their ROI started to increase. So that was a good positive feedback that we got.
Reminds me of a story that a friend of mine was telling me. He's in the sales side in lending for loans.
Right.
And so in their template, they basically had a handful of questions they asked that tied into like the DISC profile. So very quickly, you start to identify, here's how I should approach this particular person.
Ah,
I went, well, that's pretty powerful. So
yes,
I'm not sure how well it worked, but he said it was working pretty good. So that's kind of crazy when you think about it.
That is interesting.
There's a lot of applications for this.
Yeah. Maybe, Lewis, you maybe share a little bit from kind of the organizational development side, a story or two that you've got in regards to, like, seeing people going through, like, massive changes like this, where what was effective and what made it work really well that we could be applying to the AI change here.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, AI is relatively new. Some of the changes that I've seen in my experience, my career, have been bringing in new CRMs, getting the data from the old one into the new one. Sometimes that the connection doesn't go well. Based on what, Sanjeev, what you just shared, it sounds like there's a lot of things from the AI standpoint that can marry these components together. We were talking earlier about individuals using different elements like Calendly, Google Forms. When there's a strategy behind using these items, I think it really can help the individual in the organization. I think if people are left to their own devices, somebody says, oh, I used to use Calendly at my last place. I'm going to use it here. And leadership doesn't know that, you know, what each individual person is doing.
Correct.
So if there's a strategy behind kind of pulling data from multiple sources into one, that's perfect. That's a perfect scenario. So that's the challenge. It's not letting people do it on their own. People maybe still do it, but if there's a concerted effort by the organization to say, here's how we're going to operate going forward with technology, then that's a much better way forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a key thing there is the policies in the company. And, you know, a lot of times it's also privacy of data. You know, what data can you put into these systems that many employees may not be fully aware. So having that top level down policy set in that everybody can use a standard tool that the company adopts, you get a much better ROI.
Love it. Mm-hmm. One of my thoughts on this kind of goes back to kind of the premise of this whole podcast here, right? Being purposeful companies and conscious capitalism and all that is this is a great time for leaders to step back and say, again, what's our higher purpose as an organization? And what are our values? So again, that always becomes a great template for, like, you know, for implement change. It's like, let's honor the values that we've identified for the company and use those to help facilitate the process we're looking at. And the higher purpose is, you know, here's our meaning. Here's why we exist. This is why important this company is here. And it's important that we can be competitive in the world and be able to use these tools that are here available, as we're not going to be competitive in the future. Yeah. I think really utilizing that foundation, if you're a purposeful company like that,
yes,
it's a great time to bring those things forward.
Yeah, I want to say one thing, Sanjeev, you just mentioned a few minutes ago about kind of ethical behaviors, what can be viewed and not. One of the things that I was thinking is AI can feel opaque in how organizations use it. So involving kind of your team in setting boundaries and setting practices around the use of AI,
correct,
would also make sure that people are still engaged, number one, and number two, that they use it based on the policies and practices.
Yeah.
Policies are one thing. Practices can be a little different. If we put some guardrails on how we're using this and what we're using it for, and again, why, I think you'll get more buy-in.
Perfect. Yeah. No, I mean, earlier you said, Luis, about GIGO, right? Garbage in, garbage out. That's a big problem with a lot of the data that goes into the language models. Because it'll pick up anything, any data. It's a pattern recognition system. It's not something that replaces your brain. It's really a tool, right? So the better data that you provide to the AI engine, the better results you get. And then that's where the extra time that an employee is gaining can be used to do the validation.
Right. You know,
what it spits out, is that logical? Is that the right thing to do? And when you combine those two things together, then you have a more cohesive a system in place that gives a better ROI.
And where do the decisions come from based on that data that's coming out?
Correct, right? Correct.
So if the AI is making the decisions, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if a person is validating the data in.
Absolutely.
And looking at the output saying, okay, this is logical, this makes sense.
Yep.
Where do we go from here? Who gets to make the decision?
Right.
That's also.
That's a key factor there, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good things there, Jeff.
Yeah. But to your point, I did a lot of automation work back in the day, and it's like, well, humans do certain things, and then you try to go automate, and you realize how many things the humans are doing that weren't in the process, were not in the procedure or whatever.
Right.
So some of these legacy systems that we use that we all said, oh, we're going to automate this with AI, as well as it exposes, like a lot of these things weren't working that well and required a lot of human intervention to make them work.
True.
And so a lot of times there's some cleanup before you can say, oh, let's go put some AI over here. It's like, well, we got to figure out what we're really doing first before we go and start doing that. So,
exactly, yeah. It's very much like you mentioned earlier about one of your clients, right? They're using all this legacy system to do things. But it takes a lot of human effort to enter that data. If you can cleanly automate that with an overall goal in mind, then you're doing the proper AI engineering of getting the best ROI.
Yeah. If you're walking into a company that's scrambling to get the day-to-day work done,
yes,
they probably got a lot of work to do before they start to think about AI.
That's right.
Got to clean some things up first.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's talk about the future a little bit. What are you guys thinking? Where are we going with all this? You know, we got the amazing utopia. Somehow we're all going to go to the beach and drink pina coladas or something. We got this thing that AI is going to eat our babies or something.
Yeah.
So something in the middle. What do you see in the next 3 to 5 years? What do you think is going to happen?
In my opinion, it's like, you know, for example, you look at where Tesla is now today. When it started, it had all these big goals. And I had the opportunity last week to sit in a Tesla that was self-driving. And it was mind-boggling to see that. And I'm sitting right next to the driver. He doesn't have his hands on his steering wheel. And the car took us from almost 40-minute drive. And it was perfectly clean. It did all its proper stops, did the proper speed limits and everything, and took all the turns and everything. And it was kind of amazing to see where it has transformed in the 10 years. From a corporation's perspective, proper AI engineering, I think an up and down thing for the next few years, where, you know, a lot of people will jump into it, fail, and then fall back, and they have either lost some market share or they lost some time in the development, in the adoption phase, that, you know, people... companies that can train and educate and strategize them properly will probably stand out much better going down the road rather than, you know, wasting that time. Businesses will probably shut down because they went down the wrong path or they depended too much on AI and got the wrong results, and, you know, a lawsuit came and tanked them down, right? Those are the kind of things that we might see in the next 3-4 years, because even AI companies are starting to think that it's getting a little bit dangerous out there. Yeah.
What was on the news today, right?
Anthropic.
He's going public, by the way, and said, here, go invest in
exactly.
us.
Exactly. What I heard was he said, you know, you got to slow down in what you're doing with AI. It's going too fast. That was the CEO's comment.
So. Pretty ironic.
It is.
Invest in my company and we should slow down.
Exactly, yes.
I don't know if that's even really good marketing or.
Yeah, that is something at least. You know, where the thought process is going is really step back and think through what you want to do. I think, you know, like what we talked about in this past hour is having a proper strategy in place will hopefully take you down the right path and not, you know, jumping into the water there without some clear strategy.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
What are you thinking, Lewis?
I'm thinking as a child in the 70s and I watch cartoons all the time, and one of the cartoons that I watched was The Jetsons, and I think we're getting closer.
That was a favorite of mine, too.
True.
I like that show.
I have no idea where technology is headed. There's amazing things, self-driving cars and all of those things.
And I heard United already launched their air taxi that'll take you down, pick you up, and take you down.
So. Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that are just mind. I think the challenge is going to be how do people adopt all of these things? You know, in the beginning, people didn't like getting in the self-driving cars.
Correct.
There was a lot of media around them crashing.
Yep.
It wasn't perfect out of the gate.
Yes.
It's getting there, and it will get there.
It sure is, I mean, we already see Waymos, you know, people are getting used to it. I don't know, Jeff, I think you tried it, right?
Yeah, I was up in San Francisco. I had to do it, and I jumped in. It was amazing, just like the experience you had.
Exactly.
Except I didn't have anybody sitting by the wheel.
Right.
And very soon, the steering wheel is going to disappear.
I'll take that away, yeah.
Yeah.
So that listening to your example, Sanjeev, you know, the Jetsons, we're almost there.
True. That's true. Yeah.
I think it's amazing. I mean, I don't think we can even really fathom, right? Because so many people, again, as we start to engage more and more people thinking about how it can be used, then it's just going to continue to expand. It's going to be wild.
Yeah. And a few weeks ago on my CyberTech panel, we had an entrepreneur who came on and talked about the amphibious car, which is kind of the same thing where, you know, you can we had these amphibious cars 20 years ago where they did the experimentation of, you know, you get on the land, get on the water right away, and it automatically navigates, brings out the propellers or whatever mm-hmm. that needs to be. But now this guy has come up with a system where you don't feel the rocking on the car when you're in the water. So it's some kind of, I forget the exact term, but it's a suspension system that's so automated with AI technology in there. I mean, that's where we are heading, that with all the traffic, you now get under the water on the San Diego beach and get to L.A. in like 20 minutes.
Don't need the 5 freeway anymore.
Right? Don't need the freeway anymore, yeah. It's amphibious cars are probably the future. We'll probably see how this guy, he's got some good results. Pretty interesting to listen to his talk. Yeah.
I always like to close out with the question of what's the one big idea? So people didn't remember anything out of this podcast except for one thing. What would that be? Whoever would like to go first, go for it.
I'll take this one.
Yeah.
I think the one big idea from my standpoint is machines help get the work done. People are the ones that get the work done. So how do we make sure to include humans in all of the things that technology can do for us going forward?
Awesome.
I mean, you took my punchline, Louis. But to circle back on all the talk we had at Bytes, you know, what we have been in the business of solving a client's operational pain, it's always tied to strategy. What exactly is your top-level goal, and how are the employees going to react to that change, and how do you put a plan together? So, you know, there's going to be a lot of companies who get drowned by the media buzz. You know, the CEOs are already in that phase. So I think the advice there is, you know, take some time to brainstorm with the team and maybe start with one or two real tools that can slowly train the employees and get them familiar with the system. And gradually you start the AI adoption in a more meaningful manner and get better ROI.
I love that.
Yep.
My big thought from all this is leadership has a huge role to play. I think bigger than it's played ever, right, as we walk through this transformation. Some wild things are coming our way, and it's going to take some leadership to lead us in an appropriate way that everyone comes out the other side in a good way. At the end of the day, it's about people.
Yep.
Well, guys, I appreciate you coming in here today and spending a little time with me and talking about AI. Everybody's talking about AI, so we thought we should talk about AI as well.
Thank you.
And, go get a plan. Have a strategy. Take care of your people along the way, and good things will happen for you.
You got it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Sanjeev.
Thank you, Luis.
Well, that's our show for today. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from GL Project Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.